The following is a class on the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter number 4, text number 34, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasathikari, recorded on December 22, 2007, in Govinda Valley, Australia.
So I was told you had a drama about Guru. So I was asked to speak about Guru. So, that is very easy to speak authoritatively about Guru, because Krishna has spoken authoritatively about Guru. If we simply repeat the words of Krishna and the previous acharyas, then we can give perfect knowledge about who is a bona fide Guru, how to approach the bona fide Guru, how to take shelter of the bona fide Guru, and how, by the mercy of the bona fide Guru, to achieve spiritual perfection. So that's what we will do tonight. We will study Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, text 34. Since time is short, we will not do the responsive chanting. I will simply say it once, and then we will go into the purport.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Tadvidi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya. Upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tatvadarshinaha.
Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The path of spiritual realization is undoubtedly difficult. The Lord therefore advises us to approach a bona fide spiritual master in the line of disciplic succession from the Lord himself. No one can be a bona fide spiritual master without following this principle of disciplic succession. The Lord is the original spiritual master, and a person in the disciplic succession can convey the message of the Lord as it is to his disciple. No one can be spiritually realized by manufacturing his own process, as is the fashion of the foolish pretenders. The Bhagavatam 6.3.19 says, Dharman tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. The path of religion is directly enunciated by the Lord. Therefore, mental speculation or dry arguments cannot help lead one to the right path. Nor by independent study of books of knowledge can one progress in spiritual life. One has to approach a bona fide spiritual master to receive the knowledge. Such a spiritual master should be accepted in full surrender, and one should serve the spiritual master like a menial servant, without false prestige. Satisfaction of the self-realized spiritual master is the secret of advancement in spiritual life. Inquiries and submission constitute the proper combination for spiritual understanding. Unless there is submission and service, inquiries from the learned spiritual master will not be effective. One must be able to pass the test of the spiritual master. And when he sees the genuine desire of the disciple, he automatically blesses the disciple with genuine spiritual understanding. In this verse, both blind following and absurd inquiries are condemned. Not only should one hear submissively from the spiritual master, But one must also get a clear understanding from him in submission and service and inquiries. A bona fide spiritual master is by nature very kind toward the disciple. And therefore, when the student is submissive and always ready to render service, the reciprocation of knowledge and inquiries becomes perfect. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Bhamsajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha. I remember when I first came around this movement, I was thinking, I'll be a devotee, but I won't become a disciple. That means you really got to surrender if you're a disciple. So I told the devotees, I'll just be a devotee of Krishna, I won't become an initiated disciple. But then the devotees showed me this verse. If you're actually going to be a devotee of Krishna, then you have to obey Krishna. Otherwise, you're not a devotee of Krishna. Krishna says you must approach Guru, surrender yourself, you see. So, I didn't have a philosophical leg to stand on. The only thing I could do was surrender, and I did. I held out for a little while, but Krishna gave me some special mercy. He gave me a vision of what it would be like to be a disciple of Prabhupada. And when I had that vision, I knew there was nothing else to do except be a disciple. That's when you really get the nectar. I mean, I'll be honest with all of you. You're just licking the outside of the jar of honey until you take shelter of the spiritual master. In fact, Rupa Goswami, who's the great authority of the science of bhakti, he lists, in the order of their importance, the items of bhakti. You know what the first thing is? Adau Gorashvayam. He says the first step is that you must take shelter of the bona fide spiritual master. That's the very first step for becoming Krishna conscious. First step. And what is the second step? You have to get initiated and receive instruction. And what's the third step? Well, if you receive the instructions, what are you supposed to do? Supposed to let them go in one ear and out the other? No. You must obey the instructions. So the third item is, you obey the, and this is given in the Nectar Devotion, you can look it up. The third item is, you have to obey the orders of the spiritual master. Third item. And because the guru is not a standalone entity, he's simply a humble servant of the previous acharyas. The fourth item is, the spiritual master then engages you in following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. That's the fourth item. You see, like Prabhupada, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, etc. Bhakti Vinod Thakur. You become a pakka follower of all these great acharyas. The guru guides you how to do that. How to become a first-class Prabhupada Nuga, Bhakti Siddhanta Anuga, etc., you see. And the fifth item is, you inquire from the spiritual master, how to what? How to advance in Krishna consciousness. We sometimes see that people approach spiritual master for different purpose. Just like recently I was in Nevada, and I went to one home program, and one man said, I must have darshan with you. And he said, actually, I'm fighting a court case with my wife. We have gotten divorced, and now we are fighting a court case to see who can win this case. And Guruji, I'm asking your blessings that I can win this court case and defeat my wife in court, my former wife. That's why you approach Guru for darshan, you see. So that is not why you should approach Guru. You should approach Guru to understand how can I advance in Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, it's simply a waste of time, you know. If you're just approaching the Guru for your sore knee, you might as well just go to a doctor, you know, an MD. If you're approaching Guru, then you should be approaching Guru, how can I advance in Krishna consciousness? That's the purpose for approaching Guru. If you follow the formula given in the Bhagavad Gita, you will get the result. Just like if you want to bake a cake, you follow the recipe, doesn't it? The result is you'll get a nice cake if you follow the recipe strictly. So Krishna is giving recipe here. How you can have the, you can receive, how the knowledge of the Absolute Truth can be imparted unto you. Krishna is giving you the recipe. Simple thing. You approach Guru, inquire submissively, and render service. Why render service? Why not just take the knowledge and go without serving? You see? Well, you know what? If you take something without giving something in return, is that love or is that a lack of love? It's a lack of love, that's right. If I take something from you and I don't give you something back, that means I'm being greedy and selfish. So when you approach Guru, you get knowledge, you almost think, how can I serve him? He has given me so much knowledge, so much inspiration, so much blessings to help me advance. Now how can I serve Guru? You see. And that's how the knowledge becomes realized. Otherwise it's just theoretical. It's a very nice theory. I was preaching in Russia and one girl said, oh, this is very interesting. That'd be okay for a newcomer, but she'd been coming around for a long time. And she said, oh, this is very interesting. I said, you have to not just find it interesting, you have to be willing to actually surrender, you see. Prabhupada warned me about that. He said, if you simply study the knowledge but you don't put it into practice, then after some time it will become dry and useless. So if you're enlivened by the Vedic teachings, if you're enlivened by Krishna's teachings, and you don't actually apply them in your life, after a while you'll become bored with them. Prabhupada's warning to me personally. Therefore, inquire submissively and render service. That's the instructions of Krishna. So if one does that, inquires and sees, how can I serve this great spiritual master who has blessed me with so much inspiration, illumination? You see, how can I serve him? So the more that you become absorbed in serving the spiritual master, to that degree you realize Krishna and not beyond them. You can only realize Krishna to the degree that you lovingly serve the spiritual master. That's the extent of it. So therefore we have to totally, fully, completely absorb ourselves in loving service to the spiritual master. Srila Prabhupada made that very easy for us. That's how he got the movement started. How did he do that? He showered us with so much love and affection, it was unbelievable. He was so kind and so merciful to us, that you couldn't help but love Prabhupada because he was so wonderful. Everything about him. I mean, even people who just heard about him without ever meeting him, they would love him just by hearing about him. The way devotees would describe Prabhupada. I remember in Austin there was one little girl. She's a little baby girl. She had never seen Prabhupada, but she heard the way people would talk about this person named Prabhupada. And she would say his name, Prabhupada. And I had never seen Prabhupada either yet. And I would just hear this little girl, the way she would call the name out Prabhupada, and I was feeling love for Prabhupada just by hearing this little baby call out the name of Prabhupada. It was so powerful, you see. Prabhupada was giving so much love, and the devotees were trying to reciprocate, and then he would give them even more love, and they could give even more to him, and he would give more to them, and they would give even more to him. He would give even more to them, and this way, the love, that loving relationship was becoming thicker, sweeter, deeper, richer, more nectarian, more sublime, more inconceivably ecstatic. You see, that is called dynamic relationship. So these great acharyas, they may appear to be gone, but they are not gone. They are not gone. He reasons ill who tells that Vaishnavas die when thou art living still in sound and living try to spread the holy name around. Bhaktivinoda Thakur. These great Vaishnavas, they are still present. And if we will give our loving service to these great Vaishnavas, try to please them with our thoughts, with our words, and with our deeds, then they will shower their mercy upon us, just like torrents of rain in the Indian monsoon season. So, we simply have to seek out a bona fide spiritual master. And when we are blessed to meet the bona fide spiritual master, then we must surrender to him. He will save us from this cycle of birth and death. We simply must completely surrender. Do you know the story of Prabhupada, how he met his spiritual master? Most of you know. Some of you may not know. Srila Prabhupada had grown up as a pious boy. His father was actually a very pure soul, Gaura Mahante. So he learned how his father was always doing the puja. He would come home from his shop and just do puja. Every spare minute he was doing puja, ringing the bell, doing the puja. His father was a great pure soul, a great pure devotee, Prabhupada said. But at the same time, Prabhupada was caught up in Gandhi's movement. He got into this civil disobedience movement of Mahatma Gandhi. And anyway, he was gainfully employed as the manager of a gigantic chemical factory in Calcutta. And so, one friend, Narendranath Malik, he came one day and said, Abhay, there is a great sadhu who is visiting Calcutta. You must come and hear this sadhu. Actually, amongst his friends, Abhay Charan, or Srila Prabhupada, he was always considered the leader. Whatever, if he approved of something, everybody would say it is good. So his friend wanted to get Abhay Charan's approval of this sadhu. But he had had many experiences. His father was a very soft-hearted man. He was always inviting all of these sadhus every night in the home for prasad, but most of them were just pseudo-sadhus. You know, they would dress up in saffron. They would become a professional beggar by dressing in saffron. They had no... It was just a way to make money, that's all, wearing saffron. So Prabhupada had this bad experience. He said, yes, I know these sadhus. No, I don't want to go. He wouldn't go. But his friend, he said, practically he dragged me to come and hear in that neighborhood. Maybe you have seen that neighborhood. You can see the sign if you're going from the Calcutta airport to my airport. You can sometimes see the sign Ulta Danga. Maybe some of you have seen that Ulta Danga between the Calcutta airport and my airport. That's where Bhaktisiddhanta was speaking. The Gaudiya Math, they had one property, one ashram. I don't know if they owned or rented, but they had one house at Ulta Danga. And on the rooftop in the evening, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would be giving the pravachan. So as soon as Abhay Charan and some of his friends came, he immediately could see, Bhaktisiddhanta could see, these are educated boys. In those days, education means British education. It means English speaking. They have learned English. So immediately he gave an order that you should spread this Krishna bhakti, Krishna consciousness, to the English speaking world. And our Srila Prabhupada, then Abhay Charan day, he argued, because he was a Gandhian. He was wearing the white khadi dhoti, which is the symbol of Gandhi's movement. So he immediately argued that who will hear from us? We are a dependent nation. First we must become independent. And then we can think about spreading Krishna bhakti. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he defeated his argument that this has nothing to do with politics. This is the prime urgency of the moment to spread Krishna consciousness. So, Srila Prabhupada, our Srila Prabhupada Abhay Charan Day at the time, was convinced by his argument. And immediately within his heart he understood, this is my Guru Maharaj. You see. It's not that he had gone through some formal process, well, you know, you come to this level and now you're sheltered. And there was, it was just, he heard the spiritual master, he knew immediately, as soon as his argument was defeated, he knew, this is my spiritual master, you see. And then, because his business took him away, for 11 years he was out of contact with the Gaudiya Math. He got some arrangement with his employer that he could be the sole representative of his chemical factory in the northern region of India. He was situated in Allahabad. So, for financial reasons, he moved to Allahabad. And he was out of touch. But Prabhupada explained that I was always thinking, I have met such a nice, saintly person. Prabhupada said, practically, he initiated me. See, there was no formal initiation. But he said, practically, he initiated me. Because that connection was there. He understood, this is my spiritual master. So anyway, the disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, they came to Allahabad to open a center. And Abhay Charan Day, the pharmacist, was so happy. Oh, they have come. So he became very much participating to help them with their preaching work. And then, also sometime after that, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was doing the parikrama, Rajmandal parikrama. So, Abhay Charan Day, he had the opportunity to go and hear Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur again, as he had done 11 years prior. And he was also recommended for initiation by the devotees of the Gaudiya Math. So, 11 years later, in 1933, he was initiated as Abhay Sharanaravinda. So when we say A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, it's Abhay, that A.C. is Abhay Charanaravinda. So the point is that simply by hearing the words of Guru Maharaj, within his heart he made that connection, and that connection was later on confirmed by the practical initiation ceremony. The Prabhupada said the connection with Guru begins from the first moment you hear the Guru. actually. The initiation ceremony, that came later, but the actual connection act began before the initiation ceremony. You see? So when you hear someone, you realize this person is my spiritual master. This person is the one that I will become a disciple of, you see. That's the beginning of your relationship. The Diksha ceremony is simply a reconfirmation of what has already taken place in the heart. So, of course, we have to be careful. As the drama pointed out, there are so many charlatans. The world is full of bogus gurus. So we have to be careful to find the bona fide spiritual master. We have to understand the symptoms of a bona fide spiritual master by studying the shastra. We should not simply do it blindly out of some sentiment. Because most of the gurus out there in the material world right now, they're cheaters and rascals. They are very good at taking your money, but they cannot take away any of your anxieties. You see? The real guru, he is not after your money. He simply wants to take all the anxieties out of your heart, that's all. It's the only thing he wants to take from you is your anxieties. So if we can find the bona fide spiritual master, then we should take shelter of them. The bona fide spiritual master is by nature very, very kind. He wants to save us from our fallen condition. So we should take advantage of that mercy by surrendering at his lotus feet and doing whatever he says. And that is the meaning of disciple. He always remembers the orders of his spiritual master. He always meditates on the orders of his spiritual master, and he tries his level best to successfully carry them out. So I can ask now if there's any questions. What's he saying?
He's saying that in ISKCON there are categories of the spiritual master. Some is realized, some is not realized.
Oh, there are different categories within ISKCON? A grade A guru, grade B guru, and like that.
Or is it possible to find a bogus guru within ISKCON? I mean, to be very
honest. Is it possible what?
To find a bogus guru within ISKCON.
Oh, is it possible to find a bogus guru within ISKCON? Well, it's not supposed to be like them. But some of them actually did turn out pretty bad. I mean, let's look at the history. So, don't rely on just some institutional stamp to make your decision for you. You really have to read Prabhupada's books. You really have to know from Prabhupada's books what is a bona fide spiritual master. And then you have to pray to Krishna, and you have to then, you know, Krishna will, he'll bring you to a person who's actually a living embodiment of Prabhupada's books. Not just superficially, but deep within. That's what you need, you see. There's some people, we call them the Ritviks. They say that nobody is a guru except for Prabhupada. That no one else is qualified. They say that Prabhupada didn't want any of his disciples to be accepting disciples. But that's completely untrue. Prabhupada says again and again throughout the books, he says, one who knows now the disciple, he is the next spiritual master. He said that after the departure of one's Guru Maharaj, it is better to become Acharya. Initiating guru. That's a better thing one should do. Prabhupada made it very clear, but he also said, not prematurely. If someone is prematurely taking the position of guru, they are bogus. You see, they will not be able to properly guide you as a spiritual master. It has to be someone who's actually mature. And the GBC doesn't really take the responsibility to say this person is mature and this one isn't. Basically, all they're doing is saying, well, this one is at least following the principles, we know that. But who's actually mature and who's not, that you really, that's up to you. You have to make your own judgment based on Prabhupada's books. Is this person mature? That, what does it mean, mature? That's described in Upadeshamrita. Vacha vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, mudaro pasta vegam. Etan vitanyo vishahete dira sarvam apimam pritivim shishyam. One who can conquer mind, words, anger, tongue, belly, and genitals is fully qualified to make disciples all over the world. So you really have to, if you want to, you know, the onus is on your shoulders. You have to understand by carefully reading Prabhupada's books what does it mean to actually control these six pushing agents. And you have to find a spiritual master who you can see, and Krishna will confirm for you that this person has actually conquered his senses. That person is qualified to make you a disciple, and he can make millions of people into disciples. He is empowered with Krishna Shakti. You see? So, yeah, sometimes there have been devotees that were actually immature and not really fully ready for that position. And the disciples, they've been through great difficulty. So one should be very careful to understand what is the qualifications of a bona fide spiritual master. And to study that prospective guru to make sure he's actually got his senses under control. He's not just a flash in the pan. Does that answer your question? Yeah. Next question. Yes.
When do you know that your time has come that you should take initiation now? Like, is there any specific time that now you should take the initiation?
When should you take initiation? Well, my godbrother Dhananjaya Prabhu, he was not initiated. He had just joined the movement in London. And there came time for the questions and answers in Prabhupada's lecture. And he raised his hand and Prabhupada recognized. His question was, how soon can I get initiated? That's actually very nice, to be very enthusiastic, to be initiated. So, when's the right time to get initiated? When you're convinced that you're ready to commit yourself to those vows, you see. You don't want to get initiated when you're not really ready to make a lifetime commitment to chanting 16 rounds and following the four regulative principles. But when you're convinced that I should make a lifetime commitment to chanting at least 16 rounds and following the four regulative principles, you're ready for initiation. That's when you're ready for it. So as soon as you understand the importance of these things and you're doing it, then you're ready. The present ISKCON policy is 1 year of doing that. So you should be doing that at least 1 year. And then you can take diksha if you're recommended. Another local authority has to certify. Yes, from our objective viewpoint, we can see that you're qualified. We think you can make it following these principles for your whole life. We've watched you. You've seen your attitude, your speech, your actions, and we sincerely feel that you're qualified. So we'll recommend you to the guru of your choice, and then you can be initiated. Any other questions? Yes?
Maharaj, is it true that only a sannyas can be a guru?
Is it true that only a sannyasi can be a guru?
Oh, sometimes we hear this in ISKCON, that only sannyasis can be gurus. In fact, one time, one devotee, that I actually made a devotee through the internet, and I sent them to their nearest temple, and they became, you know, evolved with a local ISKCON temple. And they finally said, they were getting qualified now. And they said, I'd like to be a disciple of a Sankarshan Dasadakar. But he's not a sannyasi. They immediately said that I was disqualified to be a guru because I was not a sannyasi. The leader told my student that, which is completely untrue. In fact, it's stated in the purport of Srila Prabhupada, that according to the Pancharatra injunction, only a grahastha Brahman can initiate disciples, not others. But then Prabhupada further explains that because Lord Chaitanya has introduced this principle, kiba vipra kiba nashi shudra kine noe jay krishna tatva veta say guru hoy. Because Lord Chaitanya has introduced this principle, now the sannyasis, they can also initiate. But formerly, who was Krishna's guru? Sandipani Muni. He was also guru. You see. So the actual system, Vedic system, was only grihastha Brahmins. But then Lord Chaitanya introduced this principle that the sannyasis also, if they know the science of Krishna, they can also initiate. Anyone, brahmachari, vanaprastha, grihastha, doesn't matter. If he knows the science of Krishna, he can become a guru. So this idea that only sannyasis can be gurus is a bogus idea, completely bogus. Question.
You talked about how we can choose a good spiritual master, but from the spiritual master's view, like if I want to have a spiritual master, how does he know like I am following all the principles?
He takes the word of the local authority. Of course, he may know you also. He may have the spiritual masters are very observant of the people that they're preaching to. He likes to, you know, to get to know them, and he's personally counseling them. They're revealing their hearts to him. And this way, directly from the student himself, the spiritual master can know about his spiritual position. But the spiritual master does always take the, according to ISKCON procedures, he must always take the recommendation from the local authority. He can't independently initiate someone without the local authority's recommendation. It's a great difficulty for the spiritual master, because it's stated that the spiritual master has to take birth again for any disciples that don't go back to Godhead. So it's a great disaster actually for a spiritual master if he has a disciple who gives up Krishna consciousness. It puts the spiritual master in a very, very difficult position. In fact, it's described, there's one, you may have heard of Bival Mangala Thakur. Yes. His spiritual master in his previous life was named Soma Giri. So, this Bival Mangala, he had come all the way to the bhava stage. He was just one step away from praying, but he just didn't quite make it. Bhava stage, the preliminary stage of pure bhakti. But because he had a little tinge, he came back as a rich, you know, rich man and a rich family. And you know that rich men, they generally become playboys, you see. So, he became a playboy. He had a prostitute girlfriend. But do you know who that prostitute girlfriend was? You may be shocked to hear this. I was shocked when I read it in Prabhupada's teachings. His own Guru Maharaj came back in the form of that prostitute. Can you imagine? To save his disciple, he came back as that prostitute. His own spiritual master. So do not force your spiritual master to come back as a prostitute. You see? Take this Krishna bhakti. Make your life perfect. Do not put the spiritual master into difficulty. Questions, Mara? Yes.
You said the guru gives love to his disciples and disciples. So in ISKCON, if I choose a spiritual master and you're not able to contact him regularly, like gurus usually travel worldwide, and how does this communication happen after initiation?
Well, you have a choice. I mean, so some gurus are easier to contact than others. You can always choose one that's easy to contact. If you're worried about not having any ability to contact him, you can choose one that's easier to contact. That's one thing you can do. You can... I mean, you have the choice. In the old days, it was just Prabhupada, and that was it. But now ISKCON's a big shopping mall, you know. You got, you know, you have this shop, all these, you got 30 or 40 gurus up in a big mall, you know, which one shop you want to go into. You can go up and down the mall and check out all the shops and see which shop you like the best. So if you're worried about not being able to contact, then just find one that gives you good facility for being in contact with them. That's one thing you can do. But maybe you've already were inspired by one because his lectures are so wonderful and his disciples were so inspired. So maybe you've already taken initiation from someone who is, in fact, difficult to contact. But the fact is that the spiritual master is also present in the form of his instructions. So then you have to take advantage of and associate with him in that way. Even if you can't directly write him or call him on the phone and have personal meetings with him, you have to connect with him through his teachings, which is ultimately the most important way of connecting. When I joined the movement, it was okay to write Prabhupada a letter. Any devotee could write Prabhupada a letter, a personal letter. But then just 2 or 3 months after I joined, they changed the policy. But I had already written him once and had gotten a few answers. I was addicted to that personal contact with Prabhupada. So I continued to write. Of course, I was a little nervous about it because there was this announcement, no one should write. But then Prabhupada, he freed me of all my anxiety. He said, actually, you should ask the local authority. He said, but if there's any urgent need, I'm always happy to hear from my beloved disciples. So I had the loophole, you see. Prabhupada gave me the loophole that if you go to the local authority, but if you're in difficulty, if you really feel the urgent need to write me, it's okay. I'll be happy to hear from you. Tell me personally. So I wrote him. For a few more years, I have about 10 letters from Prabhupada. But then I finally got to, and I knew it was a concession that he'd given me, and I knew it wasn't easy for him to answer letters from, you know, everybody in the movement. And he was giving me some special mercy, and I knew it. But finally, I reached a point where I didn't feel the urgent need anymore because I was so enlivened by hearing his lectures. I was realizing so many things by preaching myself. Going out and preaching on the university campus, I was having so many realizations that I actually didn't feel the need to write him anymore because I was connecting with him on another level and I was getting that reciprocation even without directly contacting him, you see. So that is also there. But it actually, that was the very unique thing about Prabhupada, that even though he was very busy and he had, you know, thousands of disciples, everyone felt that they had that personal connection with Srila Prabhupada. He was very expert at doing that. So our gurus in ISKCON, they need to, as their numbers grow, when they get more and more disciples, they should always remember how Prabhupada was able to keep all of the devotees feeling that personal connection with him. So our gurus have to remember that and try to be like that also. The devotees shouldn't feel now they're cut off from their guru, they have no more access. Devotees should never feel, that's their father. You had a question?
So it is not a requirement that the disciple should always be in contact with gurus? It's not a requirement as such.
To have personal,
yes.
It is not required. The requirement is that you must chant 16 rounds and follow the four related principles. Whatever order is coming to you from the spiritual master, you must follow that. That's it.
Second thing is, when you do puja, do you need the guru's photos in front of the other?
If you're going to do puja to your own spiritual master, do you need his photograph? Well, if you're a Vaishnava, I think you would. Of course, you're an impersonalist, you know. You think it's all Brahman, and It may not matter.
My question, is it recommended way or is it...
Yes. It is recommended to worship the photograph of your spiritual master. He is personally present for the disciple in that photograph, and any service you render to that photograph is personal service to your spiritual master. Okay. You can fan the photograph on a hot day.
No, I'm just asking, I just want to know.
Okay. Yeah. Yes, that is recommended. You have photographic guru and you worship. Yes, that is recommended.
So when you offer some prasadam to Lord Krishna, do you offer part of that prasadam to your guru or Prasad Prabhupada?
Actually, the system, the actual system is you offer to, the way we were taught in the old days in ISKCON, was you offer to your spiritual master, then he offers it to his spiritual master, and he offers it to his spiritual master, and it goes all the way up to Krishna. Everyone, and then Krishna honors it, and he gives the prasad down to Lord Brahma, who gives it to Narada Muni, who gives it to Vyasadeva, and then the offering goes up, and the prasadam comes down, the disciplic succession. That's how it works. If you offer to your Guru Maharaj, he doesn't take. He thinks, I must offer to my Guru Maharaj. And he thinks, I cannot take, I must offer to my Guru Maharaj. It just goes up the whole disciplic succession. And then once Krishna honors it, it comes down the disciplic succession. That's prasad. And that's how it works. Questions more? Yeah? I don't know that there are any ladies who are giving diksha at this time. Although, according to Vaishnava culture, there is no prohibition against a lady becoming an initiating spiritual master. Just like sometimes there in the university there are lady professors also. So there is no... But generally, women have not done. Sometimes we see Janava Mata, she was not only an initiating guru, but she was the leading acharya of the whole Vaishnava community. The Gaudiya Vaishnava community, she was the big head acharya, Janava Mata. So there are, generally, women have not, historically. Although there is nothing against. It is simply up to the woman if she's qualified and she aspires to take that service. There's nothing to stop her from doing that. Yeah.
Maharaj, you mentioned you got initiated from Prabhupada in 1971.
You got initiated by Srila Prabhupada in 1971?
Who? Oh yes, myself, 71. Ten, something like ten. 10 or 12, I don't know.
Do you still have those letters?
Yes, yes. Oh, the letters that he wrote me?
And what are the contents of those letters? What sort of personal...
They're in the Veda base. You have Veda base? You can look them up in the Veda base. They misspelled my name in the Veda base, actually. I told them to correct it, but they put Sankara Shan. Instead of Sankara Shan, Sankara, like Shiva, you know, Sankara Shan. But yes, they're all there in the Veda base, all those letters, the Prabhupada book. They're wonderful, wonderful instructions. Actually, the Ritviks say that nobody should want to be a guru. Only Prabhupada can be guru. But Prabhupada told me, I asked him, you know, can a disciple aspire to be a spiritual master? Prabhupada said, yes, that's a spiritual desire. So the Ritviks say, you know, you can't be a guru. But Prabhupada says, yes, you can be. So who am I supposed to listen to, the Ritviks or to my spiritual master? I actually had a debate one time with the Ritviks on the email, and that was my final question to them. You tell me I cannot be guru, and my guru encouraged, Prabhupada encouraged me, yes, you can. So who should I listen to, you or Srila Prabhupada? They couldn't answer because either way they're defeated. You should listen to us, they're defeated. You should listen to Prabhupada, either way they're defeated.
So Maharaj, whatever directions you get from Srila Prabhupada, are we getting the same sort of same level of directions these days?
That depends on you, Prabhu. I've been in this movement long enough to know that some are on the track and some are heading off the track. I've seen him come and go. This place is like a bus station. I've seen him come and I've seen him go. Even, you know, all, you know, I've seen pot washers come and go. I've seen sannyasis come and go. I've seen GBCs come and go. I've seen gurus come and go. I've seen him come and I've seen him go. So it depends on the individual. If your desire is to become completely surrendered servant of this movement, completely dedicated soldier of the Prabhupada army, you see, then you can get just as much mercy as those people got at 26 Second Avenue. There's nothing holding you back. Nothing. Because Prabhupada is right here. He's right here, right now. If you're surrendered to him, you will get the same mercy they got at 26 Second Avenue. That's a fact. Questions more? Yeah.
My question is, those who follow Ritvik philosophy, mm-hmm. and accept Srila Prabhupada as their spiritual masters, mm-hmm. then who are those authoritative people or group of people over there who constantly guides the future disciples?
Well, see, the thing is, they accept, well, I only accept Prabhupada as my guru. But actually, they're rejecting Prabhupada by that philosophy. You understand? They're actually rejecting Srila Prabhupada because he said that after he departed from this planet, that the new devotees who'd come would become disciples of his disciples. So these people are saying, no, I won't follow Prabhupada's instruction. I'll do it my own way. Actually, they have no connection with Srila Prabhupada. It is simply a shadow connection. It is not a real connection. They're not connected with Srila Prabhupada. It's a shadow connection. That's all.
Those group of devotees, they are also considered within ISKCON.
No.
Am I right?
No.
Mm-mm. They are not within
ISKCON? No.
Okay.
They've started their own movement. They call it the ISKCON Reform Movement. Mm-hmm. And they have a magazine called Back to Prabhupada. If you ever get it, you might want to burn it because it's full of nothing but blasphemy against ISKCON, ISKCON devotees, ISKCON preachers. They put Prabhupada on the cover and then on the inside they just, you know, they blaspheme every single leader of ISKCON. Every issue, it's just new, different blasphemies, that's all. It's a magazine of blasphemy. And they call it Back to Prabhupada. If you ever get that magazine, the safest thing to do is burn it. But if you're really strong, you might open it up and just see how blasphemous someone can become if they don't follow Prabhupada's instructions. Yes?
Last question. That means in no way they are connected or follow the instructions to the GBC?
No, they reject, they say the GBC is bogus. They say the GBC are demons. Yeah, they're really far gone. They say the GBC are demons, and anyone who follows the GBC is a fool and a rascal. That's what they say.
So that means there are two divisions.
No, we haven't divided. They split off from us. We're still here, going strong, expanding more and more all over the world. They're a little tiny splinter group. The dogs will bark, but the caravan will pass. Next question. The ladies aren't asking any questions. What's going on over there? Is they sleeping? Or? Yes. How many rounds do you chant every day?
I reached up to 12, but then I dropped down. She reached
What time of the day do you chant your rounds? What time of the day do you chant?
Start in the morning, few rounds, and then come down in the morning. Like six.
2 in the morning.
6 o'clock. Few in the morning.
A few in the morning. Oh, you don't even start your rounds until 6 a.m. And that's, the trick is, since you're going to spend the time doing something anyway, if you can shift, you go to bed earlier and get up earlier and chant your rounds. Instead of staying up late chanting your rounds, the rounds chant in the evening are usually slower than you would chant them in the morning because there's so many distractions. So it's better time management to take rest earlier and chant the rounds early in the day. Just like I have a very busy day here, especially during these retreats. So I was getting up at 3. I got up at 3 o'clock this morning, you see. We have deities also. We did Mangal Arti for the Radha Damodar. So I got up at 3. We got my rounds done, all the puja done, and everything before the program began. All the rounds are done. The puja is done. The key is get up early and get 16 rounds done before you leave the house. That's the key. And here's another little trick that you might try. If you don't get them done, you think, well, I don't have time to finish them. I'll just go ahead and take my breakfast and go to work. What if you make a vow that I won't take any food until I finish my rounds every day? You'll be chanting your rounds every day. I mean, is it going to kill you to miss breakfast? How long does it take for breakfast every morning? Half an hour? The time you cook it and what if you chanted japa during that time? And just had a little yogurt during your break at work, your 15-minute break at work. You know, you have to think creatively. I know that when I had been a brahmachari for many years and then I got married, my GBC arranged a marriage for me. Vishnupriya Manaji. So I went out and got a job. I went to school and got some training, got a job as a computer programmer. So anyway, the first job I got was a really tough shift. You go to work at 11 and you get off at 8. You know, 11 at night and you get off at 8 in the morning. So I was very dedicated. I'd always gone to Mangal Arti. Now, my God, how am I going to go to Mangal Arti? It's a great anxiety. But the boss told me, because nobody wanted to work that shift. I mean, it was horrible, 11 till 8. But he said, there's really only a half hour for lunch, but you can take as long as you need, They gave me so it worked out that I lived like about a bit, maybe I was 15 minutes away from our apartment. And so I would leave work at 4:15. I would drive to the apartment, pick up Manaji. We would go to the temple by 4:30. I would attend the full Mangal Arti, and then at 5 o'clock I'd get back in the car and be back at work by 5:15. And I went to Mangal Arti every day, you see. And I was able to take her to the temple also. She was able to get a ride to the temple for the morning, and I would come back just as they're finishing the Bhagavatam class. And then we would go home and I would, So in this way, if you're really desiring to do sadhana bhakti, Krishna controls everything. He even controls your boss. He'll make all arrangements. It's just a matter of how much do you desire to chant 16 rounds? How strongly do you desire to chant 16 rounds? That's the real thing. Krishna controls everything. He can pull any string he wants to. He's just waiting to see how determined you were. You know the little sparrow, how determined she was? You know that story? You don't? Yes. There was a little sparrow. You know the story. And this little sparrow, the mean, nasty ocean, stole the eggs from the little sparrow. Ha 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 ha. That little sparrow, a mother is very attached to her kids. She was very disturbed. You give back my eggs. So what would the little sparrow do? She said, I will dry you up. So she would run down to the ocean with her little legs and she would put her little beak in the water and she would take some drops of water. And then she would run back up to the land and she would deposit that water in the dry land. And she would run back down and dip her beak in the ocean again, take some water, and again run back to the dry land like this. And everybody was laughing. Just see that stupid little bird. She's going to run herself to death. She thinks she's going to dry up the ocean. They were all making fun of her. But you know what? She has a big brother. You know who her big brother is? Who is the king of the birds? Do you know? Gajendra. Gajendra is the carrier. Huh? Garuda. Sorry. Thank you, babe. Garuda is the king of the birds. So, Garuda is the personal carrier of Lord Vishnu, and he has great mystic power. So he heard how they were making fun of his little sister, and he became very, very angry. And he came swooping into the scene in great rage. And he told the ocean, you better give those eggs back right now or I will dry you up. And the ocean knew, and it's give the eggs back, you see. So Prabhupada says the moral of the story is this. God helps those who help themselves. So, you have to help yourself to the best of your ability. And then God will fill in the missing gaps. Is that all right? All right. So I expect the next time I see you, you'll be chanting 16 rounds. Yeah. And Krishna will help you.
She said, I'll try.
Huh?
She said, I'll try.
No, try it. We don't accept them. I've learned with Indian people, you never accept the word try. Try means a polite no. No, I will not take the word try. Mm-mm. You have to do it. You must. There's no option. It's do or die. You must do it. That's all. I'm not taking anything else from you. You must do it. Any other questions? All right then. So we'll stop here. Raja Vidya Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.